Hi, I'm Zane Sabag, and welcome to Appreneurs, where I'll do a weekly deep dive into some of my favorite consumer tech startups. Today, I'm chatting with Zach Hudson, co-founder of Deft. Zach founded Deft in 2019 with Alex Gunderson to make online shopping easier. Tired of dealing with annoying ads and bad search results, they created a search engine that actually understands what you're looking for, or lets you search by image. I've tried Deft, and I really think they're onto something here. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Zach.
Hey, Zach, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Really excited to have you here and let folks know a bit about what you're building. Could you tell us about what you're building and why you're building it?
Yeah, so we are building Deft, which is a search and discovery engine built for accuracy. It really started because my co-founder had an incredibly frustrating search. He was looking for a gray couch with wood trim on the bottom in a mid-century style, and he couldn't find it. It took him something like 30 hours. He just started hacking away on his own search engine. I was building another company at the time. It was called Recommend. It's kind of like Yelp, but for product reviews. And I bumped into Alex, and we kind of realized we were both trying to solve the exact same problem, but from different angles. We teamed up, combined forces, and have been building Deft ever since.
What are some things you like and hate about Alex?
I am incredibly lucky. The most complimentary to me, co-founder, in my style of work. We're very different people. Where I have huge gaps, he usually fills them in. Alex is a little bit more descriptive than I am. I'm a little bit more to the point and shorter than he is. I think there's a million things that I love about Alex and a million ways that we complement each other. If I had anything, it could be, let's tone it down on the descriptiveness sometimes. And I'm sure he would say, how about you expand on your shortness? That's about it though. We really don't bump heads too much.
One of the biggest struggles I feel in e-commerce search is that people are using whatever website they use more often than not Amazon. The classic answer to beating out companies that dominate a market is to either build a 10x better product or change the core experience. Which of the two do you think you're doing? And could you talk about how you're doing that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because people aren't out there searching for new search engines. Maybe they are. I haven't really looked into the queries, but they stumble across a new tool and then they can't imagine a life without it. So the most dominant player in search right now is Google. But interestingly, in e-commerce, Google is nowhere near the top sites that people are starting their searches on. That's actually held by Amazon. You could almost think of Google, or the way that I like to think of Google, is like a vertical search engine. For general searches, they're great. So if you're trying to find some links, perfect. They do a really good job of doing images and videos and maps. But when it comes to e-commerce, Amazon is the most dominant player. After Amazon, you have this very messy middle of discovery sites like Pinterest, marketplaces like Wayfair, other e-commerce retailers, and so on and so forth. But Amazon has a fraction of the products that are actually available. So I think last time I checked, Amazon had like 356 million products across kind of their marketplace and on their store. But doing some back of the napkin math of e-commerce sites in the US, there's actually 2 billion products just on reputable websites alone. So there is a fraction of the products that are available, and Amazon doesn't cater to all those. So there's a big opportunity for us to provide high quality search across all of those other products that are out there. And when you ask about building a 10x better product or changing the core experience, I actually think they're one and the same. The average shopper today spends 15 hours across 12 different websites over 79 days trying to make a purchase decision. That's friggin' insane. And the number is actually increasing, not decreasing. So our goal at Deft is to bring that number down to zero. So of the 2 billion products that are out there, what if you could get the right one instantly every single time? Our recipe for that is building technology that lets our users discover what they want, communicate it freely, and get perfect results better than anything else. Expand across categories so you can use Deft for all your e-commerce searches. And then eventually embedding our search everywhere so you don't even have to think about using Deft to be using it.
Why did you pick furniture to start with?
We picked furniture to start with. So we started testing Deft during COVID. A lot of people are looking around at their houses going like, I can't stand being in this room anymore. So it was a very natural category for us to start with. And interestingly, furniture is one of the most non-branded categories out there. A lot of people who are shopping online can't really think of a furniture brand like you can maybe an apparel or electronics brand. So it made it very easy for us to start with this natural language search that we started with across that category. Whereas if we had started in, let's say we started in shoes, you may just go directly to Nike. It's going to be much harder for us to win that customer, at least in the beginning when we're starting out.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. Something that's come up a lot in my own building journey is that semantic search seems to be a confusing thing for many consumers to digest. Now, I also saw that you guys have an image search, but I wanted to get your thoughts on semantic search in general right now, and if you feel like this friction will decrease over time.
Yeah, I actually I'm curious what you think. Like, what have you kind of come up across in semantic search?
Well, I think first of all, calling it semantic search is a sure way to lose. that term will be popularized for a while. And I think it needs to be very context driven. So for example, if you're doing something just remotely like social or like helping people go across their data, we call it like vibe search. I think that's a much better term. A lot of different founder use that. I think image search and, or like easy search, smart search, those are like terms that I think work better. I don't know if I've nailed it, especially in the type of application that you're doing.
Yeah. I think semantic search, like pre-deep learning, was basically like, hey, let's just do vector search. And I think nowadays, semantic search is like, hey, let's still do vector search, but like, let's throw in some LLMs. And that's really what semantic search has become. And there are still two really big problems with semantic search. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff, but it's obviously very hard to build. But there's always been this problem of bounds, and there's been this problem of data. Talking about bounds first, there's limitations with semantic search in that it's hard to communicate the bounds to the user. This is kind of like the age-old thing of people always use Siri to set alarm clocks because they're not sure what it can do, and it often fails at everything else. With the introduction of LLMs and these wildly popular chatbots like ChatGPT and Claude, almost overnight, we saw a user behavior shift. Even with Deft, we started seeing people go from these really short form queries like keywordies style to expecting their search bar to be more intelligent almost immediately. Like, we regularly see people type in full paragraphs on Deft, which is kind of unheard of in the age of keywords. As a lot of people have pointed out in the industry, AI is not quite true intelligence, and bounds are still a problem. And then the other issue is, in e-commerce especially, is there is an incredible amount of garbage data. It's been over SEO'd, over advertised for so long that even if you use an LLM and you feed it in that data, it's going to give you not accurate results. So how we've dealt with it, overnight, people's queries changed. We had actually been building like GPT-3. So we'd already been building parsing in the knowledge graph that I'm sure we'll get to in this podcast later on to support that. So we were already ready to support those types of queries. The other side of it, which is the data, we are building our own e-commerce search index with exceptionally clean data to solve the other half of the problem.
Yeah, that's absolutely awesome. I read in your TechCrunch article that you're a self-taught engineer. Could you tell us a bit more about how you became that and what motivated the shift?
Yeah, so I started learning programming because of a video game when I was a kid. It's called Grawl Online. I think it's still around. The founder of this game had created his own programming language that allowed you to customize the game however you wanted. So think Minecraft, but way more customizable. So if you owned a server, you could program every element of the game. I was hooked. I spent all of my waking hours building levels and game mechanics and all the stuff. And it just introduced me to programming so much so that my dad I ran up a really big bill on my dad's credit card for dial-up internet free trials at the time to keep playing that game and keep building stuff. But from there, it just spiraled. I built this like a graphic design community when Flash was really popular. And then I started doing websites for my friend's dad. And I think for me, outside of the fun stuff that I did that taught me programming, what's really worked has been I'm not the type of person who can sit down and do your traditional type of studying, just learn it for the sake of curiosity. I really have to have a project that reinforces it. So for me, what got me closer to Alex and what ended up resulting in Deft was I was programming to build the other company Recommend and bumped into Alex. And then obviously we teamed up. Thankfully, Alex is a much more highly qualified engineer than myself. Like, I know enough to be dangerous and I do program, but generally we'll call him the smart one.
I really appreciate that answer. I wanted to ask you was a bit about your personal background before starting Deft. Mm-hmm. Could you walk us through your life and what you think kind of led to you?
I grew up in a small town in South Carolina, or at least it was small at the time. It's become a more popular town in South Carolina now, but it wasn't when I grew up, I promise. It wasn't obvious that computer science was something that I could go into. I don't have a single friend that went to school for anything technical. The obvious path for me when choosing my major and going to college, even though I was designing websites, even though I was programming and it was my passion, was finance. Like it seemed like the safe bet, you know, you kind of go to college, you don't know what necessarily what you want to do. Startups weren't even on my radar at the time. While I was in college, some friends approached me and said, hey, we want to build this meal delivery service. And I was like, yeah, I'll help out. And that gave me my very first taste of, wow, I have this amazing skill with programming and I can actually make money from it or build something like a startup. I didn't even know that it was a thing. Right after college, I got my very first job in finance. I hated it. I did not enjoy it. And I was immediately like, okay, I need to figure out what my real passion is. This degree is a waste. And I quit my job working for Vanguard, which was like a financial company, and went to work for a small e-commerce agency in South Carolina. And I got incredibly lucky. That agency ended up becoming a major agency. I was like hired somewhere in 14 to 20 or something and grew with them to a lot of employees and worked with some incredible brands. So it really gave me a lot of exposure to e-commerce. And then from there, I just bounced around. I worked for another e-commerce technology and I worked for an e-commerce brand running operations for them. And the way I made it out to San Francisco, though, was I had a friend who was like, Zach, if you want to build a company, you'd be out here. So I just flew out and did the traditional Silicon Valley thing. I just slept on his floor for a while until I figured things out. So that's how I got here. And that's how I got into the startup technology space. So
something I really like about Deft is that you guys are super lean. I think you've raised a couple million. And we're seeing editors in the space like Daydream raise close to 50 million. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about your strategy for raising there? And what are your thoughts on them as competition?
Yeah, I firmly believe scarcity and being hungry can build better startups. Like I think for Alex and myself, we've really been iterative in the way that we approach Deft. The very first version of Deft wasn't search. It was a text box that when you submitted it, it went to Alex and myself and we fulfilled your results via email. And that's because we wanted to get a sense of what types of queries people are going to submit. And then also how painful was this problem? Were they willing to wait 24 hours for the results? So I think for us, we've taken that approach every single time to try to make sure that we actually had something that people loved before we went out and raised a ton of money. And then also our revenue is growing pretty quickly. Our user count is growing dramatically. We haven't needed that much money to be honest. And frankly, like if you don't have to raise that much money, don't. I think there is definitely this problem. We can like outside of this podcast talk about it, but a lot of startup founders think that fundraising is the end all and be all. It's like this big moment. No, you have to go build a company that people love and want, and you're going to be around forever. Like that's how you actually get to the valuations that end up making VCs money back in the end. So we started by doing that first rather than going out and raising a bunch of money. But to the question about Daydream, I think it brings great awareness to just how big of a problem that we're solving at Deft and e-commerce as a whole. And there is more than enough room for multiple players in the space. Like if they're only handling fashion, we're handling furniture and home decor. Think about how many major marketplaces there are. Wayfair generated $12 billion in revenue last year. Shine generated something like $32 billion in revenue last year. So there's a lot of big opportunities. I know they haven't launched their product yet. I'm not sure how close they are to launching. The only information that I really know is that they're going to use off-the-shelf tools, or at least that's something they talked about in their article. We actually tried that, and it goes back to the bounds and data problem that we talked about just a minute ago, which is why we started to build some things internally to solve that. That being said, there's a long road ahead for both of us. Products change as you start to get to product market fit. Our mission is to be the starting point of every shopping journey, and that means fashion too. So I'm not exactly sure what their approach is. Maybe they just go and solve a totally different problem as they get into it.
With the adoption of semantic search engines like Perplexity, how do you think SEO advertising is going to change in the next decade? What are your thoughts on how e-commerce brands specifically can adapt to take advantage of this shift?
I've gone back and forth on this so much. I'm really curious to see how it plays out. I know like Perplexity says that they put the citation right there and a user can click it. But from my perspective, if you're copying, pasting, summarizing someone else's content, I know personally I'd be quite upset. I'd move really quickly to stop them from cannibalizing my hard work or my business if it was my content. And then advertising in the current state of large language models is a particularly terrifying thought. Like Google Ads are already hard enough to distinguish, but imagine when the advertisement is embedded and presented as legitimate information. Oh my goodness. Like I can only imagine what the kind of world we'll live in. So I don't know where it's going to go. I think SEO and advertising is kind of like we're in this weird limbo state right now as startups are moving so quickly. the laws and like how things are going to play out hasn't played out yet. So I think there are still a lot of big changes to come. But let's say that at Deft, we've fulfilled our mission to be the starting point of every shopping journey. The best thing an e-commerce brand to do to take advantage of the shift is to do what they should be doing, in my opinion, which is making great products and then representing it with accurate, non-manipulative data. And then we'll just handle the rest. That's really our goal. Our goal is to like connect the user to the perfect product. And so long as you make a great product and it's you've got accurate information, hopefully we can do our job.
Amazing. So basically like be authentic and you'll get good results. Yep.
I think so. And I think that's always stood out in SEO. You know, like every time Google does a change, it's often to try to discourage like manipulative practices. But the people who have been creating authentic content from the very beginning, that's where they're trying to move their algorithm toward always. Well, kind of like they have kind of competing incentives, we'll say, with advertising. But I think being authentic is much more important in this world where you have so much unstructured, unverified data being created with large language models. Like the best thing you can do is create accurate, authentic human content.
I think you guys are, you know, definitely starting to move towards the mission. Something that I read that is that's on Deft conversion rates, i.e. the number of people that buy a product after seeing it, they're almost 5 times higher than traditional sites. Why do you think that is? What's the ceiling for how good they could be?
Oh man, if we had our way, we would take that 79-day journey that the average shopper takes and bring it to zero. And the conversion rate would go from the e-commerce benchmark right now is like 3%. That's, you get a thumbs up if you're an e-commerce manager and your store is generating 3% conversion. Our goal would be to take the shopping journey down to zero in terms of time, and conversion rate would be 100%. And then hopefully no buyer's remorse. I think it's really about connecting you as the shopper to the perfect product and then giving them all the information they need to make a decision. That all the tools that we've launched, I don't know if you got to see our Imagine tool or Concierge that we've been experimenting with. All of these tools are to help you make a decision. And that's kind of the direction that we're headed in. I don't think we're there yet. Our conversion rate is higher than the e-commerce benchmark. I think that's our users realize that we're more trustworthy. We don't have ads. We don't let SEO manipulate us. And we also have better results in some instances than your traditional search engines. But I think we have a long ways to go. I'm excited about bringing that conversion rate from our current 10 to 15% all the way up to 100.
So this is a question big time for the technical listeners. Mm-hmm. If you guys look up Deft, they've built some phenomenal tech. There's an awesome knowledge graph, awesome parser. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about how you went going about learning how to do that and then actually implementing it that, especially because you were doing that about 3-4 years ago now, way before all these massive courses on LLMs and everything were. I mean, it's so awesome. It's so awesome to like see like legitimate technical IP.
I know. It's real. I think when our investors look into like really take a deep dive into our product and they don't just, I think a lot of people, because of the AI hype, just assume it can do everything. When in reality, it doesn't quite do everything. And I think a lot of people's expectations are sky high and they're going to come back down to earth as they realize the possibilities and the bounds and all of these things. So we already encountered that. We took large language models. We applied them to e-commerce data and the result isn't good, which is why we started building the knowledge graph in the first place. But I'll take it back from the top for that question. So I have to give credit where credit is due here. My co-founder, Alex, is responsible for putting in the hard work and research to make that a reality. It was born out of, we'd actually tried to apply some of the large language models and best-in-class LLMs to e-commerce data, and the result wasn't good. So we had to create something that did something different. And I'm happy to get into the technical weeds of what we've done there and what we built, because I'm really excited about it and the possibilities, not just for furniture and home decor, but across all of e-commerce. And potentially, like, I think there's ramifications of the knowledge graph database we've built beyond just e-commerce search, which is really interesting.
Yeah, could you get into a bit of the technical details?
Yeah, so I'm going to dramatically oversimplify the brain here for the sake of explaining it. Let's say you have an intuitive side of the brain and you have a logical side of the brain. Large language models basically represent the intuitive side, but it's not until you pair it with a logical side that you unlock the full power of the brain, really. And that's our knowledge graph. Knowledge graphs have always been kind of this holy grail thing in terms of its ability to make connections and understand things over something like a vector database. But they've always represented data in this sort of 2D way, which results in something very inflexible, not scalable, which is largely why people haven't been using them when pairing them with large language models. So our knowledge graph represents data in kind of a 3D way, representing a 3D world. And it makes it significantly more scalable, much faster, and ultimately more accurate, which is what we're trying to do with our search engine.
How do you guys source and process data from other sites?
We had to build our own e-commerce search index. We could crawl, scrape the web, a lot like Google, nowhere near as sophisticated. We process the product far beyond what a traditional crawler, spider. We try to understand significantly more about every product that comes into Def so that we can make these queries possible. And so you can also do these multimodal queries. It's almost like we have a Wikipedia page level of understanding about every product behind the scenes.
How do you think e-commerce will be evolving over the next decade? And what areas in the space would you like to see consumer founders building in?
Oh, you got to tell me. You're a shopper online. I want to hear your take on this too. So I go back a lot to like the early 2000s when e-commerce really started to blow up and the dot-coms and the pets.com and all that stuff. And really the advantage they gave over going to a retail store was just inventory, like access to these products. And then you started to tick on more things over time as technology evolved. You now have logistics that really help you get it there quite almost as fast as retail. You have returns now, so you can actually return a product just like you would in a retail store. I'm always trying to think of like, what other things could be coming to e-commerce so you don't actually have to leave your home to almost replicate the same experience that you would at retail or almost even better. So I love to think about, not obviously people talk about the fully immersive experience and VR and AR and how that can play a role in seeing products in your home and on your body and all that stuff. Even sooner than that, in my opinion, diffusion models can really help you do that. We're already doing that on Deft right now. Like you can literally generate, you can take your home, take a picture of your home and then generate an image and then find products in the image you generate, which is super magical. We're trying to do the reverse of that too, where once you find the products, can you generate them into your room? And like instantly see how it's going to look and then also find the complementary products for that. So I think there's some amazing possibilities for decreasing the decision-making time for shopping online and other parts of the retail experience that are still missing from online shopping so that you just add to the ultimate convenience. I'm curious what, I'm sure there's so many other things that people are building in e-commerce that now that there's all these new technologies out there. What do you think?
I have to confess something. I'm not a very big shopper. I try to actually purchase minimally, thrifted, or use semi-secondhand.
I love it. I think, but I also feel like tools don't necessarily cater to that sort of new generational sort of shopping style. And so I think there's a big opportunity there too. Like imagine if once you find the new product, it instantly finds the thrifted version of it too. Like at the same, you get choice and the ability to find stuff is something that we're working on right now. But I'm excited to see where e-commerce goes. Ultimately, I'd love for the products that you buy online actually bring you joy. There is not wasted money. It's not just waste and or like pollution or waste. And you don't have any buyer's remorse. That's where I'd like to see it go. And all the technologies, I think, are working that direction.
I really appreciate that answer. Thanks so much for your time today, Zach. Really appreciate you on the podcast.
It was a ton of fun.